Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
And Fran.
Welcome, guys. It's Pottercast 173.
173.
With just Melissa and Sue and Frax this week because John has gotten ill.
John got sick.
His own fault, and we will mention to tell you why in the drum.
Yeah.
He's a silly, silly man.
Yes, he is.
So, okay. We have some great news this week, Sue. Why don't we get right into it?
We have a lot of news. It's not really, well, I'll tie this for number one, but make sure to go check on Pottercast videos. Our YouTube channel for our big news. Okay. But starting out at number five, Tom Felton, who plays Draco Malfoy, for those of you I know have been following this, he appeared on the Jack Osborne reality program, and we have video of him swimming with a shark, and he bungee jumps. And it's this really cool moment when he actually is, like, kind of afraid, and like, it's really pretty dramatic, and he's like, okay, I'm going to tell him, and he tells his girlfriend that he loves her before he jumps off.
Aww.
Oh,
that's not very Draco of him. It's kind of emo. I'm kidding.
I mean, it's not really I don't think I would ever bungee jump. I'm sorry, that's just one thing.
I really want to.
Do you really?
I want to do it once, yeah.
See, bungee jump scares the crap out of me. I really want to skydive.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry. Not bungee jumping. That's
because bungee jumping, yeah, the fact that you do it and then you do it again and again and again consecutively, it's like, no. I jump once, I fell, I land, I'm good. Not going ving. Uh-uh. No, thank you.
Yeah, like a yo-yo.
Yes, he's a human yo-yo. Perfect.
Well, not me. I mean, I have no problem because I like the snorkel and scuba dive, so the whole shark thing doesn't scare me at all. But that whole bungee and skydiving, I'll stick to that balloon. We'll podcast from a balloon, that's fine, because I got something under my feet, but flinging through the air.
No free fall podcasting for
you? No, thank you all. So this is kind of cool. Our next story, this is really pretty cool. Artist Mary Graham Prey. She is the artist who does the artwork for these collectible editions of the U.S. Harry Potter novels. She has an exhibition that's being on display at the Cedar Rapids, Iowa Museum. And it's open now, and it's running until February 5th. And she has done almost 96 different pieces of artwork that are on display. You can walk through, and she's done some new pieces for it. Including alternate covers that she had done, drawn for the Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows and Harry Potter and Catholic Friends, which is amazing. And she also did, you can see her pencil sketches, of stuff she did for Beetle the Bard and her original, there's one of her dragon, which she's done for the deluxe edition of the thing, and then just some of her, in the Scholastic editions, we have them. There's a piece of art at the head of each chapter, and you can see some of those too as well. Some of you might have seen them for calendars. I don't know when they stopped making those, but if you ever have those are marvelous artworks. But you can see the pencil sketches for that too. It's just, I want it all precious.
Well, the one that I love the most of those is the one that says Harry Potter and the School of Magic instead of Sorcerer's Stone on the front. It shows that they were really considering the title, not in just talk. They had a mock-up of School of Magic on the front.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Because that was Arthur's alternate title to Philosopher's Stone, and Joe didn't like it.
That's mentioned in Melissa's kind of being monster, but it is mentioned in her book, which is kind of, for me, I was really surprised to learn that. I was like, when I was reading it, I was like, oh, so that's where that came from. So that was really kind of a cool moment as a fan to learn that. And then
And here's fun fact, the French book is translated to Harry Potter and the School of Magic.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Cool.
Yep.
Did they not have a word for Philosopher's Stone that translated nicely for it, or what?
I think the French people just liked it, but I don't know. It was French.
The French have to be different.
We want the School of Magic.
They were being kind of French.
That's horrible. I just had a horrible impression.
I'm kidding.
No, I just, horrible French impression.
Oh, I thought you said I was being horrible about the French.
No, well, I was like, School of Magic. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of bad. So, I'm sorry.
No, this is very, very cool stuff. So if you get a chance, it's running now through February 5th, and go see it, check it out.
I want to go. Sketches is the best thing in the world.
This is kind of a surprise, I have to say, our next news item. involves the film and an actress named Emma Thompson, who, as we know, plays Professor Trelawney, and she is not going to be reprising her role for the last movie.
Okay, does that mean they're going to recast, or she's just not, that character's not going to be in it?
I think it's she's not going to be
okay.
in it.
Okay, so it's not that she turned it down, it's just that she's not, she wouldn't be able to come back in if she wanted.
Well, she's choosing yeah. not to come back because she's she writes and does these films called The Nanny McPhee, which is a very successful film for her. She played a different kind of witch. And she's making a second movie for that, and she's choosing to focus on that instead of doing that.
Oh, I loved her as Trelawney. She was so great as
Trelawney. Oh, she's perfect. She's But, this is, again, I'll try not to rant. One of my big beefs is that, you know, the adults are just relegated to just a few, you know, they're not prominently featured in the films, and I can understand why she viewed it in her comments where she did, it's a turn in the film. They aren't really, like, a big performance for her, so.
That's, I totally get it. It's just me being selfish. I wanted her back, because I loved her as Trelawney.
What do you think, Melissa? How do you feel? Do you think that they'll still cast that part?
I mean, I would have loved to see her hurling the crystal ball down, and I think they could have done that in one day, and she could have been in it, you know? But she clearly doesn't have it the spot in her heart that we would want her to have for it, and so, okay.
Yeah,
we'll focus on other things. Yeah.
You know? And honestly, like, if she was going to be in either the 6th or the 5th, I'd rather her have been in the 6th than, I mean, the 6th or the 7th. I'd rather have been in the 6th, because she has a more prominent part in the 6th with her whole, like, being upset and the rumor requirement, and then the lightning struck tower. That would have been cool to have seen, but...
But as this, she's not, so...
Yeah, well, yeah, right. So...
You'll hear, coming up on our newscast, we do talk about our continuing story, focus on the canon conundrum about Beetle the Bard, and I know we're all excited for it. And then people in the UK, pay attention now, because they are going to be having release parties at Borders at midnight for the release of The Tales of Beetle the Bard by J.K. Rowling.
Yes.
And Waterstones is having many parties the next day starting at 8 a.m. So if you live in the UK...
And Leaky's plans for that week have been under discussion for quite a while, and we're finalizing some things this week, so pay attention next week if you are going to be in the New York area.
Bum, bum, bum!
Oh, I will say. Yeah, we've got some fun stuff coming, so.
Okay. Very cool. So now we had a couple really big things happen this week, so we're going to have a series of number ones. One of our number ones.
Oh, okay.
One of our number ones is that Joe has written a piece for, a couple months ago we talked about a book, for the birthday book in honor of Prince Charles, who is the Prince of Wales. And they were putting up for his 60th birthday, and they asked a bunch of pretty famous people to contribute to it. And Jo has written a piece she writes about the Deathly Hallows, from Deathly Hallows, which she writes about the forest scene. And that has now appeared online in The Guardian. She wrote about it. I thought it was lovely.
It was very beautiful how she was
how she was talking about birthdays.
The part where she's talking about how, the duty and, like, the fact that, you know, a prince is a prince, and so, like, the duty to, you know, to accept that mantle, and then just the responsibility and the choice that's involved, even though it's perceived as there's not a lot of choice when you're born into something like that. It was really interesting. I never really kind of gave it much thought in that direction, so I really enjoyed it. It was a good read.
Very cool.
Sorry.
I thought it was beautiful. I will listen to anything she wants to talk about, the books and anything. But this, I thought this was a really nice little piece. The book is going for charity, which does help support his, he has a number of charities, and this will help children in the arts. And also, the artist Quentin Blake, drew a new sketch of Harry walking through the forest, which you can see online too.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What? Dang it.
Fuck, you read Leaky.
I do. That's why I'm pissed that I missed a drawing post.
Yeah, it's in the icon. If you look at the story right beside it, you can see it there, too.
He's
a marvelous author. And we'll have a link to his website. You should go check it out. It's so good. It's just marvelous.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what else. Another number one. Let's see. Oh, it involves something trailer. What was that? Oh, that's right. We got a new trailer for Harry Potter.
So I love how you, forget it. I'll say it later. I think I know where you're going with this, but it's very funny. Yes, we got a new trailer. It was amazing.
Goodness sakes. Yes.
And you can hear our full out reaction to the trailer on our YouTube channel. Actually, we released a little leaky extra, but if you want to hear our reaction to it with also audio, I mean, I'm sorry, video, go to our YouTube page at youtube.com/pottercast, and you can, like, basically have a trailer accompanying the podcast and what moments we're talking about. It's like a, people always have been saying that we should do an enhanced podcast where you have the pictures that come up in iTunes. This is sort of like that, but it's on YouTube, so yeah. Go check it out.
So our friend Mr. Frankie was not able to join us that, but now
that
you're here.
Class.
What do you think? Tell us, what do you think?
Oh my gosh. Okay, first of all, me being the huge Hermione nerd that I am, I love Hermione. I love that shot of her hair. I know it's probably because of the potions, but I hope it's like that for at least a good 15, 20 minutes on film, because that's Hermione's hair, and that's, and like, oh, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. And then the bridge. Oh my gosh, they broke a bridge. The apparition, the potion class in general. I'm excited. Like, this was, like, what I like about the other trailer, like, the first trailer we saw, it was really just very, I don't know, thought-provoking and kind of very dry. And then the international one was, like, I think it was a nice bridge between these two. Because this one was a lot more just kind of like summer blockbuster, all like a lot of big shots and stuff like that, and a lot of the humor at the end and whatnot. And then, so it's nice to see both sides of it. So I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
It was wonderful. We have the high resolution, these marvelous screen caps in our galleries. Our gallery crew did a fantastic job. And it is amazing. One of the things that Melissa caught too that I hadn't noticed until I went back and looked at this was that on the apparition scene, when they're coming back, is when Harry is, you know, after the cave. So it starts out at the beginning of the movie, and they do that whole swirling, and it comes back towards the end. I thought that was so slick, but to see Dumbledore kind of leaning on Harry, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a question. I know I'm going to, like, embarrass myself here, but in the potion scene that you're talking about with class with Slughorn and Hermione's hair, if you look at that, there's a Hufflepuff standing in the background behind, by Romilda Vane and behind Seamus. Did they cast a new Susan Bones? Do we know? I had not. There's a girl that's... It's not her friend. I don't think it's the Lane.
It might just be one of those extra students hanging around.
Oh, come on, but let's play along. Say, of course there's a Hufflepuff in the scene. Come on.
Of course there's a Hufflepuff in the scene, too.
But I thought that was squeakable. Okay, I thought I had to put that out. Yes, there's a Hufflepuff in there. Yeah, it's quite nice. Okay, but I just thought that was marvelous. That whole trailer was... Well, what did you think, Frankie, about Don't Call Me Coward? That whole... Snape. Because he's saying Avada Kedavra, isn't he? Is that what he's saying?
Did I miss that?
I don't know. He's, like, gesturing with his wand. And then of course, they cut it, so it's like when the maybe he's just putting the curse on here. Because the next thing they cut to is when they're fire-blasting the Hagrid's Hut.
Oh...
It's only, like, I haven't watched, like, 10 billion times since we, not really 10 billion, but awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, it was really cool seeing everything. The Quidditch, the fire that Dumbledore does was cool. Was that Dumbledore in the fire?
Yeah, with him, Fury?
Yeah.
Those guys were creepy, slimy.
Yeah, really gross. But you can see them kind of slinking their way out of the water. It's amazing.
Melissa, I have a question for you, and maybe you can. I don't really know about this, but in the shot, there's a shot of Hermione that looks like she's crying after what is probably the death of Dumbledore. She's crying, mm-hmm. And I know you'll think this is weird that I'm mentioning this, but she is wearing a T-shirt that looks like just from Hot Topic.
Do you know that is the T-shirt she was wearing the day that we interviewed her on the set? And that question was asked, like, is that T-shirt from Hot Topic? Because it looks just like, I mean, seriously, it looks like she picked it up. I think it's just Gryffindor pride kind of thing, but she seriously looked like she was wearing something out of Hot Topic. You're totally right.
Because I thought.
Well, why is it?
Really funny.
It just really surprised me because that looked like just such a modern kind of product almost. I mean, which I know it's not, but it just looked like.
Which is, yeah, inside the film. It's product placement for Gryffindor. It's so strange. I agree. It's
okay,
weird.
Okay. Okay, I thought I was going crazy there for a minute.
It's as though maybe this all happens on the same day as the last Quidditch match.
Oh, okay.
And maybe that's why she's wearing a Gryffindor shirt.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that makes sense.
So funny to see her. Just like, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah, it was hilarious. I was like, that's a Hot Topic shirt. Okay. Excellent. So.
Okay, so one of our other things on its way to number one, but our friend, who's written a really fabulous book.
I knew you were going to do this.
Yes. It's called Harry History by our friend Melissa Nelly, right here. It's cool, debuting cool. at number 18 on the New York Times bestseller list. Woohoo! Yes.
Kind of a big deal.
Thank you. So here's what's really confusing that I've just found out about the New York Times bestseller list. It's on the website now. It's not supposed to be, it's an early list. Like, my publisher just got it on Wednesday, which means it will be coming out. But it's not going to be in the paper until November 22nd.
What?
Really confusing. The New York Times is a little bit confusing on this issue. But, yes, it's going to be a New York Times. I'm very enormously excited, and thank you everybody who's bought it and who's been talking about it and yeah, everything. Thank you.
But I knew
you, Sue. I knew we got a trailer, yeah. Dotes, and you saved this for last. You're very adorable.
No, but it's awesome. No, I think no. I'm going to be sick. I don't care what people think. But I'm just going to say, here you are, a young woman under the age of 30, your debut novel, and you're debuting at number 18 on the New York Times bestseller list. I'm sorry, that has not happened to many people, and I think that is an amazing accomplishment, and we are all very proud of you. And I just think it rocks. So well done to you.
Ditto.
Thank you. It is only better knowing that I have this kind of friend system in place here and that you guys are cheering. That's nothing's better than that. And all the emails I'm getting. The emails I'm getting from people about the book are just amazing, and I'm going to try and start responding to them, and it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try and start answering. So thank you.
So
that's sort of what I sounded like when I found out.
Come on, you squeed. You admit it. Come on, admit it.
Oh, my God. Not even a little. It was a lot. So,
that's
yeah. Wow. I squeed and screamed a bit. I cursed a lot.
So, but the question is, how's your mom doing? Is she going crazy?
Oh, my God, my mom. She's going to wear a sign that says New York Times bestselling mom. You know, she is just the most excited person on the face. And it's funny because I did a reading the other night, and now people are coming who have read the book, and so they're talking about it. And so my mom was there, and they asked me about her because she's in the book, and kind of a fight we had is in the book. And it was so curious to get a question about her with her sitting right there. It was really bizarre. Kind of one of those check yourself moments, you know. They are the most supportive. My parents are the most supportive people in the world.
You're very lucky, I must say. I do not have that kind of support system from my own immediate family like you do, and it just amazes me. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Melissa's, her family, her sister is incredible. I just, you know, it's awesome. It's awesome to watch and see. It's amazing.
I have an amazing family. Very, 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 very fortunate. That's the best kind of fortune you can have. So, in that case, I'm very rich. So.
Very cool.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm getting sad.
No, it's awesome. It's a great time, you know, because this is a celebration, too, of our fandom, too. I mean, this is great that, you know, I hope people read it and understand a little bit more about that this is not just, people dress up in silly hats at midnight, you know. There's
that.
A lot more to our fandom.
Yeah. I hope so. I hope it helps people understand what... That's what Publishers Weekly said, that the curious might finally understand their friends, which I thought was a high compliment to give the book. So, yeah, I'm really, really excited.
Is there anything else, Melissa? I think
that's it with news, and we are going to remind you to register for LeakyCon before we start making all these awesome announcements, and then there won't be a ticket left. So do that, LeakyCon.com, and then subscribe to our YouTube videos at youtube.com/podcast. Every day we do a vlog, and it's amazing, and we got a lot of fun stuff coming. You just wait. And that's it. We'll see you. We're going to do a bit by bit. We're going to do more Beetle the Bard. And yes, there are spoilers, and if you don't like it, don't listen. And then we're going to see you at the
end. Cool.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Welcome to Bit by Bit.
Yay.
Yay.
Well, we talk a little bit about Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, right, Michael?
Yes.
A little
what
bit
are we talking
of a bitty
about
this
bit.
Week? This week, we are going to go to a place that was long, fascinated, discussed, theorized for years, I think. It's safe to say in our fandom. We are finally going back to the place where it all began. This is Chapter 16, Godric's Hollow.
Ugh. Such a good chapter.
Okay, so basically Ron has just left. And Harry, you know, wakes up the next morning after all this and sincerely hopes it's a dream, which I think we can all, when something bad happens the night before, we all kind of wake up thinking, please, let it have just been a dream.
Yeah, you get that those few seconds of before that sinking stomach, the feeling kind of sits in. It's like, ugh, it was real.
Hermione's crying.
You know, those moments after you know you've had a fight with someone you really love, and you always feel like if something like this happens, and those are just terrible moments, you know, when you like when you're waking up the next day, those are just like terrible days. You know? I kind of felt sympathy for Harry and Hermione, because like, no, I get that.
Yeah.
I'm sad to read that for these few pages.
I'm sorry, we'll get to that. But anyway, so they waste a lot of time puddling around, whatever the word is, puttering around to extend their time there as long as possible, because they know that if Ron is trying to find them and he comes back to that spot and they're gone, he's not going to find them again because of their enchantments, their spells.
Oh, that's right.
And then, so they keep moving about, though, but this is neat, though. Right, Frankie? I think the next part is that they stop talking, and then Harry did something kind of cool. He was at night, because he didn't know how to deal with everything. So what'd he bring out?
The Marauder's Map, right? I think it's interesting that it actually... I never thought to think that it would work outside of Hogwarts, because I've only seen it in the context of Hogwarts. But it's kind of... It's a great just insight into what Harry's feeling right now, because he pulls out this Marauder's Map, and he looks for Ron to see if he's like... Oh, if he's back in his comfortable four-poster bed in Gryffindor Tower, you know, he has, trying to, in that regard, and then he ends up just finding Ginny and kind of, like, listlessly is just looking over this map, and he has to be extremely self-aware at this point of, like, where he's at, what he's attempting to do, what he's extremely ill-equipped for, quote-unquote, and so it was just something that was just a fun little tool in the third book and a great plot device has really became a huge insight into Harry's character, which is really cool.
It is. And it's neat how they were avoiding, at this point, they were avoiding talking about Ron at all. And yet, I just thought it was interesting how they were dealing with this third member. This is someone who had become so vital to all of them, and that they were just like not even talking about how they were dealing with that kind of situation. So he was trying to find solace in this tangible magical item. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I guess we skipped over this part, but this is cool. They when they disapparated, they landed, and she wrote the line, "Windswept, heather-covered hillside." Mm. Does anybody read like Jane Austen?
that's exactly why. So that reminds me. I mean, obviously Heathcliff on the Moor. You know, it's very. That's not Jane Austen, but it's very that era that 18th century British, lots of vegetation around you. It's cool, and it's a very romantic place, and it's interesting. And Hermione's so distraught, she just starts crying immediately.
Yeah,
and, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
They never mention Ron's name.
Yeah,
they're just not talking about him.
Yeah, it's interesting how people deal with things like that. So I guess if you just don't talk about it, it just you don't deal with the pain, or that's just a way of coping with it. It was really interesting.
I think it's a little
and
bit
what's
both.
Cool. Yeah. So all the silence is like giving Harry all this time to think about what happened and how they're right. He has no idea what they're supposed to do and how he feels like he's letting down his friends and, by extension, the world. Yeah. You know, they're doing all you know by not knowing, but they do hear some news from Hogwarts, right?
Oh yeah.
From Phineas?
Yeah. That was such a great, great way. I just thought this was so clever how they... Because I thought his character, how she had him being like little snarky and talkative before, that Joe Broderick carried it through in this book, and I just thought it was brilliant that he's the unwilling news conveyor, I guess. I don't know.
It inserts the funny. She never misses the funny. She never takes a second. She never tries... You know, whenever she can get the funny in there, she does. And Phineas McGillis brings a little snark, a little
he
sarcasm,
does.
You know.
And our fandom loves snark, so there we go.
That's true.
Yeah. But that was fun. You know, and it's out of the magic, Hermione's magic bag. There he is.
That bag's amazing. I wish my satchel could do that.
So this is interesting, though, but don't you find it interesting, the things, though, that Phineas was talking about, like Snape? I guess that he is of his house, and Phineas would have that kind of loyalty to him, but it just...
Well, that's Phineas. He's all, you know, that's all he talks about. Snape, Slytherin, Slytherin rocks my, you know. Now that Sirius is gone, he can't talk about his heir.
Yeah, that's true.
But Hermione says something interesting. I mean, they start talking about, Harry really wants to go to Godric's Hollow. He thinks Hermione's going to say no. And so he's, like, gearing up his confidence to ask her. And she's sitting and reading Beetle the Bard. And she talks about the Deathly Hallow symbol. And she, which is odd to her because it's not a rune and she can't find a translation for it anywhere. And Harry informs her that it's Grindelwald's mark. And she says, if it's a symbol of dark magic, what's it doing in a book of children's stories? Which is such a self-aware statement, because that's almost all that's in children's stories. There has to be this darkness.
Right.
It's a nice reflection of what the world thinks of children's stories.
And what the world thinks of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, no.
People dismiss it. People dismiss it as children's stories. It doesn't deal with real dark stuff. Well, you know.
Can I just tell you this too? On one of the pages, she's reading and she looks like she was deciphering something in Tales of the Beetle Bard. And this is kind of off tangent, but we're getting the book, the Tales of the Beetle Bard. It was translated, you know, Hermione. And I just think, oh, even back then, was she working on it? I want to know. I'm such a squirrel in every of these things.
No, she said that she wasn't. She said that she's just she's decided later to write them out, and then all of a sudden the stories went from like 30 to 5 because she was going to have to write them. But I think it's a nice little piece of continuation that they.
It is. That's what just these moments like that, though, Melissa, are what endear me so much. That there's just this incredible, amazing tapestry. These multiple layers, these weaving things that Ninjo can extrapolate just a little thing like that and make it this thing. It's just so cool. But you know what? I love it. I'm done. That's so squeakle. Ancient runes. Back to play again.
Okay, so what's going on next, guys?
So, he approaches Hermione about going to Godric Hall. Isn't she just, if I remember, she's just kind of like, I think it'd be a great, I think that's, it's just a very typical Hermione response, just very logically approaching it. It's kind of like, yeah, I think you're right. And Harry was all worried that she was going to think he was being too emotional about it, and like, we can't go there because it's too dangerous, but she was just like, no, I think we gotta, which was cool.
And then, of course, Hermione does what Hermione does best, is resort to a book, right? Doesn't she look all this stuff up in the handy-dandy bag and look up
the history? Yeah, the history of magic. But she has no, there's no connection to Harry's parents there, but she said something quite obvious to Harry, like, didn't you think that maybe the sword would have some connection to Godric's Hollow? It's Godric Gryffindor's sword.
Yeah.
And Harry's really just thinking about visiting his parents' graves. And, which shows you, I mean, the instinct turned out being right when he goes to his instinct. Yes, they meet up with Voldemort there, but it is in line with their next clue and their next feeling about what they've got to do. Obviously, Bathilda Bagshot was important, or Voldemort wouldn't have.
Right.
Shoved meaty down her neck.
I mean, that's really completely disgusting. But.
And you know, for if those of us who have spent any time in the forums and theorizing stuff, that Joe would take the time to write out that little part just like, from the history of magic about Godric's Hollow was such a joyful, I was like so joyful just to read that, even though it was really it is significant, but it wasn't just that she didn't need to put all that in there, and yet she did, and I was like, Joe, thank you. Great. All that stuff. It was great. Thought that was really kind of cool. So I'm sorry. I love this chapter, and it's so.
Why are you sorry about that?
Oh, you know, but sometimes I feel like I just get so carried away, and I'm such a goofball fan and uber. But I just
you're not the only carried away goofball fan here.
We're kind of one place in which
that's okay.
Podcast, so. Yeah. I know, but that's why I like doing this, and I know that people listening home, you know, you can feel that you take such joy in this. You know, it's just such a. And this chapter especially, it's been so long, so vivid in my imagination. I mean, what would they go? They're actually go, and Harry's like, okay, let's just go. About the sword, like you're talking about, like all of us at home are like, come on, Harry, get with the program, you know?
For so many years, we're like, why isn't Harry curious about his parents? Why has he asked nobody what they did? Why hasn't he looked them up? Why hasn't he said, I want to visit my parents' graves? Like, why?
Yeah.
But he finally gets curious when it's when it's convenient to the plot, I guess.
Honestly, well, if you think about it, it probably would have just been something like, oh, well, you can't go there right now. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it would have been like, how are you going to get there?
Especially after Lupin and everyone's like, you have your mother's eyes. You look just like your dad, mom's eyes. You look like your mom's dad. It's like, you think that would he hears that for six solid years, and then he'd be like, huh, what did they do when they weren't being killed by Voldemort?
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah. And then we have another genius thing. They plan out, they practice under the invisibility cloak, they're they're ready to go, and they don't think that it's December and there might be snow, and so they didn't think to cover their tracks. It's just really funny how smart and stupid they are at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very good point. You know, the reality, the normal things that you and I might think of, it's just totally was not in the forefront of their mind, especially for someone like Hermione. You know, you would have thought she might have.
Yeah. So anyway, so they get to the graveyard and they find a memorial, which I thought was really awesome. Harry had, you know, imagine the shock of Harry not even thinking that he was enshrined in a memorial from when he was a baby, because the Potter family is what ended the war, you know?
Mm, that's right.
Isn't that must have been such an odd moment for him. Here he is, this living, breathing person, to see himself, you know, immortalized in this stone kind of permanent thing. That I think that would be just very odd.
Mm-hmm. Wait, are we talking about the grave or the sign that pops out of the ground?
The memorial. I don't. Where is the sign?
The sign's in front of the house, and that's when people tagged it, and then Hermione was kind of like,
We're not there yet.
Okay, I got confused. We're talking about the when they walk by and it Lily and Baby Harry.
I missed it. I keep thinking that I missed the sign, but I don't.
No, it's probably later. I got turned around. Sorry.
So, and also, too, they realized that it's Christmas Eve. I thought it was, her description, it was interesting. It just seemed like a regular town, along with this, you know, things are lit up, and, you know, it's just kind of, there's Christmas music playing and stuff, and that was such an evocative thing, and then when you see this memorial, you can hear the music in the background. I thought that was really kind of interesting. And then they go into the graveyard. Wow.
Oh, the graveyard.
Okay, the graveyard's enormously interesting. They see a couple of graves. First of all, they find the Dumbledore Kendra and Ariana's graves, mm-hmm. which has a quote from the Bible on it. Where your treasure is, there will be your heart also. It's Matthew 6:21. Wow. And then they find a very old grave with the DH symbol on it, the Deathly Hallows symbol, and all they can make out is Ignotus. Now he's the guy who made the cloak and passed it down. But then Hermione finds Harry's parents' graves, and it says, the last enemy that shall be destroyed is death. And that's also a Bible quote. That's 1 Corinthians 15:26. And it's really curious, because there's been a question about religion in the series all this time. But then when we were thinking about this chapter, I was thinking, who picked out these quotes? Who was left to pick out these quotes? Only Dumbledore. Dumbledore would have picked it out for his family, and Dumbledore would have picked it out for the Potters, because all their friends were dead.
Right.
That's
so, or it's dead or in prison. So, you know, is it really that Dumbledore, of all the people, is the religious one, is the one that knows these Bible quotes and applies them?
That's an excellent point. That gives you another insight into this character that you think is this, you know, I mean, his mastery of magic is so immense and stuff, but he can take a religious perspective as well. That's really a good point. Wow.
I never noticed that. Interesting.
There's been so much question about religion in the books, and it's never directly addressed. And then in Deathly Hallows, it's all over the place to the point of direct Bible quotes. You know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. And 1 Corinthians, Frack, please correct me if I'm wrong. That's New Testament, right?
Yeah, 1 Corinthians is New Testament.
That's definitely Christian.
Yeah. It's, I don't have my Bible by me. I'd like to look it up.
Because those are letters from Paul.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, those are from Paul. I'd like to read the ones around it to get the context of it, but yeah, I'd have to go get it.
But she could quote, I mean, J.K. Rowling has a mastery of many classic texts, and yet she picks two Bible quotes here. Mm-hmm. It's curious.
Yeah, I mean, she could have easily chosen to not make it any sort of, you can have a graveyard, you don't necessarily have to have a Christian kind of quote on the headstone. I mean, obviously not. And I thought it was really interesting, but I think it was because it was talking about her issue facing with death, and I thought these were really, really good choices.
And I think, honestly, in the context, when you're talking about mortality, of like a character living and dying, and just in general mortality, it just kind of in our own personal context as well, people are a little bit more open-minded about, because normally if it was just kind of quoting a Bible, it's like, oh, well, you know what I mean? People would kind of get up in arms with it. But since it's in the context of like someone who passed away, people are a little bit more just kind of about it. You know what I mean? A little more, take it a little more pensively, not just kind of get scared of it, or just because like, oh wait, no, don't do that. It's just kind of like, okay, maybe, I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's not, obviously it's not identified as Bible quotes in the book, but we only realized afterwards that they sounded vaguely familiar, and started looking them up, and as the fans discovered it, they're like, oh, you know, does this mean that God exists as an entity in the Harry Potter world? I mean, there's a whole podcast we could do about that.
You know? Absolutely.
And her reflection of religion, even though nobody ever mentions God, and they do Christmas without ever mentioning the religion behind Christmas. It's interesting to me.
Yeah. For me, it's particularly, I remember writing a blog entry about this last year. I was thinking about this, and this, in particular, next, what happens next, because it's still Christmas Eve, and I'll talk about more next week, but I just found it was such a curious, an extraordinary thing that she chose Christmas Eve for this whole sequence of events that are happening. And I thought it was deliberate, but it was a very interesting choice on her part.
Interesting. I never even thought of that. That's crazy.
Yeah, cause I mean, I don't want to talk too much about it, but, you know, what happens next, this extreme evil thing on the most holiest day in the Christian, I think. It's just, well, the second most holiest, I think. But, it's just amazing. But, okay, so, you know what else is cool? Can we just talk about the graveyard? There's mention of other wizarding families buried here as well, which is kind of cool. I know we had talked about, is this Godric's Hollow, like, the place where most of the most powerful wizarding families went? Like, there was mention of the abbots and other things. And I thought that was really kind of
cool. Oh, the abbots, so, yeah. Hannah.
You know, had put all those in there. It was almost like I know Joe said that she didn't really go into fan sites and stuff, but it almost felt like that was another nod towards the fans. Like, okay, yes. You know, you guys write, kind of. I don't know. It's kind of cool. I like it.
Well, I think it's just a mark that it was an all wizarding settlement.
Yeah.
So, was it all wizarding or was
it was
mostly wizarding? It's mixed.
Yeah, it was mixed.
But it seems like it would be. I mean, it's called Godric's Hollow. It seems like one of those places that you want to live in.
Yeah, I think it was. It was wind. Yeah. I think it was wizard founded, but it was a mixed community.
Right.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of ancestry there. I mean, if the Peverells lived there. Right. Probably an old storied place, you know.
You wonder if there was any, like, realtor ads, like, what houses go up for sale there? It's just like, come live in Godric's Hollow.
Exactly. It might, exclusive.
A magical
might have
community.
Been high real estate value until, you know, Halloween 1981.
Right.
That might have killed the real estate value for Godric's Hollow.
The property market took a dive there. Okay,
the projects in Godric's Hollow. So. But anyway, the quote on the tombstone is, the last enemy that Shelby destroyed is death, and Harry rankles at that. He says that it's a Death Eater idea. Why is that there? And then Hermione really points out the way that it's not the way the Death Eaters think of it, that they want to not ever die. It's the point of living despite dying, which is, again, another Christian, very, very Christian theme.
Yeah.
And it just shows these little tweaks in thought and judgment, and these little flip sides of different issues that make up the ideologies running through this book.
Yeah, and then that quote, I think, is in reference to, like, the fact of life after death type of thing. So, like, mm-hmm. the resurrection after you die. And so I think it's just kind of like realizing that death isn't just kind of like a Dumbledore in, like, how it's the next great adventure. It's just like the wizards that choose to go on and don't linger as ghosts. It's just realizing that.
Yeah, it's not that death is to be destroyed. It's that the fact of it being an enemy is to be destroyed. Like, it's not. That's the point. It's not going to be an enemy.
Right.
Eventually, for Harry, I guess. That's going to be so cool. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, there's just two things I just want to point out before. It's very powerful, but this has to do for people that have the book at home, and if you're looking at the chapter, and you can see them, just the way that the typeset is laid out, is just set in big bold letters. You can see James Potter and Lily Potter and their birth dates and their death dates. And for me, that was, as a fan, that was like just made it so much more real, and I could kind of, I know that it just seems like very logical, but when you're empathizing, at least I was empathizing with Harry and how he must have felt to see that so starkly put out right there in front of him. And as I was reading that, it was just a very emotional moment for me. I was reading this page especially. I was like, wow, it's real. And I just felt so much for Harry, and here he was questioning, understanding, trying to grapple with what these words mean, you know, that enemy of it. So I understood what, you know, I was glad that Hermione was like, the way she spoke that. I just wanted to, from, it's a purely emotional, you know, reaction, but I just was like, and then Joe goes on to write about, here they were, that he was avoiding his eyes from the place where James and Lily lay, just bones now, surely, or death, not knowing or caring their living son stood so near. Oh, man. Mm. It just broke my heart, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the Hermione and Harry just, they kind of take the moment, and they hold hands, and Hermione creates a Christmas wreath, and this is one of the moments.
Oh, I love Hermione. I'm sorry.
Well, if you, by now, it's creating some whatever in the fan community, but Joe says in my book that this is one of the two moments in this book that Harry and Hermione share a very private and special moment that Ron can never be a part of. You know, he left. This is kind of the retribution for leaving. He doesn't get to take part in this very special moment.
Hmm.
And had things worked out a little differently, it's not entirely impossible that Hermione and Harry could have gotten together. So, yeah. Do with that what you will. Have fun, Harry and Hermione shippers. You've earned a little fun after all this time.
Yeah.
I don't want to get so mad about it. It's just something that could have happened.
It's just, I know.
Right.
Like me, I wouldn't have been upset. I'm like, oh, cool.
Well, I just thought that was also just such a very special moment, too. I mean, you can have those kind of moments with all, you can still care about, like, she can still be loved with Ron and still have that kind of special moment with just her friend Harry. And I thought it was a beautiful moment, actually, you know?
I think a lot more of it as a friend moment than I would have as a romantic moment.
Oh, of course. I see it just like, they have like a brother-sister, you know, type of relationship love, because Harry never had that, and Hermione's an only child, too, so the fact, like, that's something that they can probably share and that Ron doesn't understand, because he actually has siblings, and so he knows what that is, and so these two kids growing up, both of them kind of, you know, Hermione being isolated at first at school, because she was just kind of the way she was, and then Harry growing up with the Dursleys, like, their friendship knitting together so well, it's just kind of like, they never had that relationship otherwhere else, so I see them very much like brother-sister here, and just kind of sharing in that moment.
I think it's really beautiful when a man and a woman can be friends and hold hands like that, and it's really lovely when people can show affection for each other without worrying about overtones, undertones, whatever, you know. But it is kind of funny that Joe refers to a kissing gate twice, and
yeah,
kind of like a little knife twist. I'm sorry, but it's a very romantic message, and certainly if that's your persuasion, it had to be a nice moment for you.
It was a beautiful way to end that chapter, though. I wasn't sure how that was going to happen when you started out reading the chapter and like, oh, what would they find when they go to this grave? This is such a pivotal moment, and yeah, I thought this was a beautifully done chapter, and I just it was a good chapter. I don't know what to say. It's just so good.
No, it's a really introspective chapter. Not that much happens in it.
No.
It's not very action-filled as compared to the next chapter. I mean, it's very introspective. Harry's walking around thinking. And I think these are some of the chapters from which grew the sentiment, oh my god, they spent so much time camping.
No,
honestly, in terms of pages, they don't. If you go and count how many pages it's really small. It just feels like a lot because there's these stretches of time where they're just figuring out what to do.
Right.
You know?
See, what I liked about this chapter is, like you said, it wasn't, like, huge, a lot of stuff happened, but in regard, like, character-wise, enormous things happened. Just plot-device, not a lot happened, because they're walking around a graveyard. But character-wise, just, like, here, this is the culmination of, what, 16 years of his life? Like, of wondering, thinking his parents were dead for so long, and then finding out when he's 11 that they were killed, murdered, really, not just, you know, killed, murdered, viciously hunted down and killed. Because of him,
too, so that's probably that the misplaced guilt, I'd imagine, there somehow. And, like, he gets to see his parents' grave and, like, walk around the town where he lived and he was one, and this was where he would have grown up if nothing happened. Like, this would have been the street, the streets I would have ran down and played with, and this would have been my neighborhood. But, no, because of this horrible man, all that was taken away from him. Like, what was once running through his head is insane. Sorry, tangent.
You're exactly, I agree with you.
Well, okay, next week we're going to talk about chapter 17. Maybe we'll actually start getting through full chapters because, woohoo, maybe we won't be through some of the book in, you know, the 2011 year.
A dramatic chapter. Ooh, can't wait.
Okay.
Scary chapter. Scary.
Okay, we're talking about Beetle the Bard again.
Beetle the Bard.
I love
the Bard the last two.
I love Beetle the Bard. I can't wait for Beetle the Bard.
Man, spoilers within. Warning. Warning. Spoilers within. They've only been available on the internet for, like, a year.
1 year.
Yeah.
Spoilers within. So, this one is the Warlock's Harry Hart.
Yeah. This is a good one.
Who wants to give a quick summy?
The Warlock's Harry Hart. Okay. It's about a young wizard who was getting frustrated at his friends and his family who were falling in love, so he vowed to not allow himself to fall in love, so he indulged in the dark art to protect, quote-unquote, protect his heart from being foolish and falling in love. And then, over the years, when he got older, he found he came across this woman that he decided, like, they were, like, perfect for each other, so he figured he would let himself, like, be attracted to her, and then she told him to put his, like, she wanted him to truly love her, or something like that, and so he went and got the heart that he had taken out, and it was in this, like, magical casket, but it had grown hair, because it was outside of the, to protect itself when it was outside the body, I assume, and he tried to put it back in, but then when he put it back in, it was so, like, perverted by the dark arts that it actually, he attacked and killed the woman that he loved, and ripped out her heart that was not, like, corrupted, and then knowing that the heart was stronger than him, he instead of, like, trying to overcome it, he just sacrificed himself.
This is possibly one of the most disgusting things I've ever read about.
Yeah.
And it just reminds us all that anybody who thinks fairy tales is full of sweetness and light is silly.
Most of them aren't, actually. It's just Disney that makes us think that because they've watered them down so much.
You're right.
Because Disney. They all have their stupid, well, not their stupid, they're actually really cool little, I don't know, sidebar or story, messages to them.
Well, it's like Amazon says, this is very Brothers Grimm. I mean, in the Brothers Grimm version of Cinderella, don't the princesses cut off their feet to fit, cut off, like, parts of their feet to fit the slipper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then that's really not what we saw with Disney.
No, not really. A little bit different.
This story, even though it's really quite gruesome, is really, I think Joe said somewhere in a later interview that this is one that maybe Voldemort should have paid attention to, or people should have paid attention to, which is interesting. But, you know, I mean, people can relate to this story, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, this is, you know, how we shut ourselves off, we cut ourselves off and hope in an ideal. You can look at it from the larger context of what it really means. And I thought it was really, really interesting that it's too late. And you can always find out too late what you really want and love. And I mean, I guess people in the modern world will say, hey, look, it reminds me of Pirates of the Caribbean when, you know, him, what's his name? The guy with the snake or the wood on his head. But, you know, you cut out your heart. You cut out that phrase, cut out your heart. Well, literally, the heart is cut out here. And I just
thought, there's a bigger message, which is, because in Pirates of the Caribbean, it was just the means of keeping him alive and, you know,
well,
I get it, but here there's that if you pervert love, it's supposed to be such a natural part of you that if you take it out and pervert it, it's gonna backfire on you if you try to all of a sudden, like, basically you have to nurture it, otherwise you lose it and it'll backfire. But this oh my god, let's just think about this imagery for a second. I mean, he dies with a heart in each hand, and they find him licking the heart of the maiden that he just killed. Oh my god, it's so gross. I forgot how stealth fairy tales could be, and I give her credit for not flinching and going there, you know?
Right. You know, it's interesting because, like, in Indian, like, an, I did some history stuff here with American Indians, and well, a lot of times they used to cut out the heart of their enemy, and they would sometimes, not just American Indians, but some others would eat the piece of their enemy to get them strength.
Yeah, to take the strength of their enemy, yeah.
And so that this whole image, you know, of him licking it is just beyond kind of obsessive. It's just, ugh. I, you know, oh, God. Joe, what are you doing here? You know, it's like, this is not, I don't know. This is an unexpected tale for me to read, I must say.
It reminds me a lot, no, it wasn't a lot. I think there's just, it has a Shakespeare vibe to it.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a tragedy,
yeah.
You know.
Well, the heart has kind of has it's betrayed him because it's been perverted so long.
Well, it's kind of betrayed him after he betrayed it.
Right, and it's his selfishness has just completely taken over, and he now he needs a working heart. You know, he needs a good heart, so he kills the woman he loves. It's just so, you're right. It's very Shakespearean. It's that high level of tragedy.
Yeah, it's just very saturated in it's either. You know, like, in, you either get married or you die in Shakespeare, and I think everyone died, so...
Okay, Adam.
True.
Sorry, that was a little joke. Adam Dumberly, who is in the Mudbloods, writes quote-unquote normal music, quote-unquote, not wizard rock music, and one of the lines in one of his songs is, Shakespeare says... What's the line?
You either get everybody die, everyone gets married, or everybody dies, or something like that.
Yeah, very true. It's true. It's true of fairy tales too. They all go, you know, off into the sunset mostly, or this happens.
Yeah.
Can I change this? I love Adam, but I'll talk about the blood all day. But
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's fine.
You know, I found this was an interesting choice, though, that she put this in the, you know, out of all the tales that she could have included or written, she's talking about the power of love here, and this is another thing that goes, harkens back to Deathly Hallows, about the power of love and the choice that Harry made, and it was his love that saved him, and yet here's someone that doesn't know. And I just like the way that she chose, I thought her tale selection, these five tales that she chose were really, really interesting and kind of, I don't know. I mean, I guess this is the danger of not cherishing or not loving is the reminder of this tale, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of like, it just shows the, if the power of love can be that powerful in one context, if you pervert it in the other way, it can be just as terrible. It's just like it's kind of like how magic is in the world, or what like money can do in our world. Money can do a lot of great, powerful, great things, but it's you know, and they can do a lot of horrible things as well.
Yeah,
I mean, what do you think?
I always wonder how she gets where her starting point is as a creative mind. I wonder. I mean, as she's a creative mind, I wonder how she gets there. That's just the kind of the way.
I'm right there with you.
I'm always curious, and I just. Something about this tells me that for Joe, the first image was of a twisted, gross, actual heart, like a with valves and everything.
Yeah.
And she went from there. I don't know why. I could be completely wrong. But we know from the books, she's got this really vivid, picturesque imagination, and I could see her thinking of this heart and growing it outward into this tale about how the dark arts are not ever to be toyed with. And
what I'm interested in now even more so after reading this, and I want to read the actual when it comes out, you know, the full story, is I'd love to see, like, for her to actually get her explanation of how to bring Voldemort back and, like, how to make a Horcrux. Because if it's...
She doesn't want
to
do it.
I know, but I mean, but the fact she said it was too horrible to say, and after reading this, it's like, okay, well, she can't, you know... There's some,
exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, okay, that wasn't just a, not that I ever said about it was an empty threat, but one of the things is kind of like, wow, okay, I get it, Joe.
Babbity Rabbity and her cackling stump. Sue, you want to give a little summation?
Who, me?
How about Sue?
Babbity Rabbity and her cackling stump is a classic, I think, fairy tale. I call this the Gilderoy Lockhart tale. this is a marvelous story. It involves a greedy and Foolish King, as it's known, and he wants to round up all the witches and wizards, and he actually wants to learn magic, but he needs some help to do it. So there's this charlatan, kind of phony, kind of Gilderoy Lockhart kind of guy, who becomes the king's helper or advisor on this, and he, there's a woman named Babbity. She's a watchover who works for the king, and knows that the charlatan, the so-called expert on magic, really is a fraud. But then the charlatan goes to see Babbity's house, and she's doing it, has this weekly moment. She's kind of washing her own dishes and pans in the kitchen, and he realizes that she's a witch. So he's trying to blackmails her, I guess is the way to phrase it, and to help him out and help the king and impress the king and do all these tricks. So the charade is on, and so the members of there, imagine if you will, there's a big court, and they're going to witness the magic of the king. And so the king and his little helper, charlatan guy, are going to do some stunts or acts, I guess. And the first one is going to be amazed how they make the hat disappear. But Babbity, of course, is hiding in the background, doing all the works, all these tricks, and doing the work for them. But it's kind of like a Wizard of Oz moment. Babbity's behind the curtain back there doing actually the work. There's a couple different things, and one of the spells goes awry, and the charlatan help, I'm not sure what to call, the word is used charlatan, but I don't know what to call him, but the fake magician.
Charlatan's fine.
Is that right? Is that the word, too? Charlatan? Yeah. Okay, I'm not saying it right now. Screams that a wicked witch is at the base of this tree. And so now the crowd is like, oh no. So the charlatan says, look, this woman is causing a problem, but he's also afraid at the same time that she's going to use her power against him. So you're going to cut down this tree where the witch is, and, I guess in your mind you can kind of see it like inciting the crowd. You know, you're at an event and they get the crowd going, so this is what they're going to try to do. But now they're going to chop down the tree, a loud cackling can be heard, and at the base of the stump of the tree where the tree has been cut. And Babbity reveals herself and says, witches and wizards cannot be killed by being cut in half. And to prove it, she says they should cut the charlatan in half. But this time, though, he realizes the jig is up. And so he's revealed, I guess. And so her voice comes from the stump.
It's basically, she manages to trick the king into treating witches and wizards well for the rest of it. It's like the Salem witch trials with a happy ending, meets King Midas, meets the Emperor Has No Clothes, meets there's a little Beauty and the Beast in there. There's a lot of she manages to trick the entire these foolish wizards who are trying to control powers that they have no power over into the very opposite of what they were trying to do. He wanted to be the only one who was allowed to do magic, so everybody goes into hiding. She just laughs about it. Then he tries to show that he can do it. And when he can't bring a dog back from the dead, everybody starts to smell a rat. And basically, she turns the entire.
Because I got the impression that at the very end, the spell that she quote-unquote cast on him, that if a witch or wizard gets harmed, he'll feel the pain, I don't think it was even real. I think she just
I think she just
and I put a spell on you, so da-da-da-da-da. And she's like, oh, no.
Yeah. No, exactly. And they're so scared of her. And she only reveals herself because she's changed into a rabbit.
Right.
So that's why they cut down the tree, but there's this stump and there's these eyes coming out. And everybody's freaking out over these eyes coming out of the stuff. I mean, it's so cool. At the end, she just kind of hops out of there as a rabbit and leaves.
But it was funny. Then they made her into a statue. Is that right? The king wanted to.
There's a gold statue. Is it? It's not of her. I don't think. Is it?
Oh, I thought it was of her.
I don't know. It could be.
It's kind of confusing for me. So I'm sorry. I stumbled through that. Sort of summation thing, but yeah, it's funny that there's this golden statue. I keep flashing. Joe is so evocative when she writes, and even though these are summations that we're reading right now, just in your mind you can flash back to all the different, like the Troy thing and all the different idols and things in mythology and in history, and then there's this out comes the little rabbit. I thought that imagery was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh, it is a stout old rabbit with a wand in its teeth.
Yeah. Wait.
That's really funny.
That's what the statue's of?
That's the statue. It's a stout old rabbit with a wand that it's... Oh, no. I'm sorry. What is this?
See, it's confusing.
It's a statue of Babbity. I'm sorry. It's a statue of the woman. This is a very confusing story. It's a statue of Babbity. And, to remind him what a fool he is.
But, I mean, okay, even though I did a terrible job summation that, when I was reading, I still kept flashing to Gilderoy Lockhart over and over and over again. It's just, like, all the times he would just try and scam people. I'm like, oh, I can set these pixies free. And of course, he couldn't, and somebody else. And I just, this is such a great tale, though. I can't wait to read that.
I just chuckle at the power of, first of all, a female, another female hero. But second of all, all these people acting like outright idiots, the crowd's expecting the king to suddenly be able to perform magic, the king thinking that he can,
right,
just because it suddenly starts working, the charlatan thinking that there's no spell he can think up that he won't be able to do, and then they go and they turn on her, and she's very calmly, oh, just turn myself into a rabbit and think on the spot and fool them all and change the, you know, she's a very wise and in control woman, which I love. It's so rare in fairy tales.
You know, that's a good point. That's really a good point that you know, the heroine here's this kind of, not someone you would think is normally being, you know, the great hero, would be the older witch, you know, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Usually that role, the old witch is like, oh, it's the bad guy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Old witch with a wart on her nose.
I can actually see, you know, like, and the Muggle version of this fairy tale, like, people, as it got passed down, like, this old witch tried to do this, and cursed the king, and so, but in reality, it's like, it happened like this, you know what I mean? Just the other side of the story.
Frankie, I love these conversations, because what you just said just sparked this thing in my head. I wonder when all these fairy tales came, did they all, like, come, you know, sit around, like, the old wizarding days back when the founders were, you know, they pulled these around, like, by word of mouth, and then somebody decided, hey, I'm going to write these tales of Beetle the Bard, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
But it sounds like that, like, you know...
Aren't you hoping
old oral tradition put into runes?
I'm sorry, Melly. Yeah.
Sorry.
Huh?
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it's like from old, the same way our fairy tales came around, old kind of legends people told people to instruct their children.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And then kind of,
you
got...
know, and then somebody puts them down into ancient runes, and then we have...
So you hope that the beetle guy was like, he's a real bard. I guess we did talk about this part, but bards were like... I keep thinking of, like, Falstaff from Shakespeare, right? But weren't they the ones that would go around and tell stories?
Yeah, a bard was like a minstrel, I would imagine, a traveling performer who would tell stories before, like, literacy was common. That's how you pass stuff down.
That's why they call Shakespeare the bard.
Right.
Oh, that's right. The story.
So I hope we get those kind of comments in the, you know, from Dumbledore in the book. This is kind of squirrely.
I wonder if there's a wizarding equivalent to Shakespeare.
This might be him. No, that's a fairy tale. I don't know. Maybe Shakespeare was a wizard.
Ooh, burn.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Huh? I think she would like that.
That'd be kind of fun. Or that'd be cool if Shakespeare was a squib. That'd be interesting. Like, he was raised in a wizarding home, and like, his output for, like, was writing stories and stuff because he lived without, I don't know. In my head, it sounded really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, next week we're going to talk about the last one. Mm-hmm. Right?
And I promise I'm not doing the summation next week.
Oh, Sue.
Sue, my God. Oh, we're fine.
No. These are so great. I love these stories.
Okay. All right, guys.
Nah.
Let's go and do the either bit by bit of the drums. I don't know which is coming next. So.
Alright.
Okay.
Bye.
Click.
Excellent.
Clicky, click, click.
Dum, dum, da, dum, 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 da, dum.
Oh,
dum,
we dum, miss John here. Where's John?
John makes the drums. Let's talk about John
Turtle
for a second. So we were about to record, and we all had a little bit of a heart attack when John suddenly started fast breathing. He couldn't breathe. He was like kind of laying on the floor of his bathroom. He said, very trying to catch his breath, and we're all yelling at him to go to the hospital. And it started decreasing, and then he started realizing what might have done it. He ate a hot dog from his fridge, which doesn't sound like a bad thing, but let's think about this for a second.
An ordinary hot dog.
He knew that the hot dog had been in there since the dawn of time.
Oh, no.
He threw out another one because it looked bad. It tasted bad, but he ate the whole thing. And then he said, yeah, I thought that it was just natural that it had turned kind of white.
What? White?
John.
To turn a hot dog white? How long had that been in the fridge? Honestly. So John is sick of his own doing.
I mean, doesn't your mind just boggle? Because, I mean, hot dogs are made of so much preservatives and all kind of things. And to make it turn white, that's pretty bad. Just saying.
John, food is always his undoing. It always is.
I mean,
you don't want to waste the money of throwing out food.
Well,
he ate it and got himself sick. I mean,
I know he has a stomach of iron because he puts away all those Chipotles all the time, but come on, dude. God. And that was very scary. We're not making light, but I mean, he ate a white ball. Willingly. Goofball.
Yeah.
And he's okay, so that's the reason why we
that's all.
Bring it up. And it is kind of silly. We still feel bad for you, John.
Yeah, but what hot dogs with that?
John.
Not bratwurst.
Anyway. So, let me tell you guys, I've been having so much fun doing our vlog.
Oh, yes.
It is a lot of fun. I didn't think I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah. I didn't think it was going to be as much fun as it is. It's a whole new way to communicate. It's great.
It is.
I have to say, Melissa, we got to see, we spent a lot of time in New York and just recently for the celebrate, be with Melissa for her book, and Melissa and I went shopping for wigs. I must tell you, you did a great job putting that together. And if you've not seen it, it's absolutely hysterical.
Oh, it was fun. I knew as soon as it was us in a wig place, I'm like, yeah, let me grab the video camera. And you know what's interesting about this vlogging thing? I'm finding myself walking around with the video camera a lot more.
Nice.
Cool.
Which is lovely. It's really nice, actually, because then you look back and you've got all these great moments captured on video.
Yeah.
It's such a...
And you don't realize that you're...
You know, a random thing to go to, and it's fun. But there was some great stuff for you, Frankie. You were swinging in the park somewhere with Lizzie in Central Park. It just looked awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
I like in your last video how you're like, I'm going to soften this up with some imagery, and then every now and then you just throw a piece of, like, wind chimes in, and out of nowhere.
I enjoyed that. It was supposed to be completely asinine. Because I wanted to film outside, it was beautiful, and then it was all windy, and my computer, if it's plugged in with the camera, unplugged for a second, it goes, boom, and turns down. I'm like, ugh. So the battery's not very good on it, so I was a little upset, so I figured, you know what, I'll just film some B-roll. I was being silly. I'm glad you guys appreciate it.
One of the things is cool, we have this Wild Card Wednesday, and Melissa, if you haven't seen a chance, haven't yet seen this, you should go check it out. It's she had put up some video of Jamie Waylett, and I think we had talked about this before, but it's really cool. People have been asking to go see it.
Well, we also have some video from the election.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so you had to go home by that point, but we were out there in Rockefeller Center watching the results, and it was so much fun. And I think Alex from the Remus Lupins is in it, and Cheryl is there, my sister is there, and it was a lot.
It really did look like New Year's Eve, man. All people were honking horns. That was amazing to watch that video.
It was crazy. Yeah, so go subscribe to that, because it's really...
You should subscribe to it, because it's, like, awesome, and everyone and anybody subscribing to it.
Oh, my God. And I have got a fun thing coming for you guys this Monday.
I know, some sort of...
we have some friends that we groomed. What's the number? I don't want to mess it up, but they're pretty awesome people.
3426.
Yeah. Room 3428, man. Go subscribe to
And
them.
Some of those people will be running our very cool event called LeakyCon. Yes,
ma'am.
LeakyCon.
We are getting ready to make some more details available about it, and you should keep an eye on Leaky and make sure to get your registration, because it's going to be amazing, and it's only 6 months away. Oh, my God. So, yeah.
Very, very cool.
I was very privileged to see some of the plans for some of the events, and it's going to be pretty freaking cool. Mm-hmm. So, Boston, 2009, May, you calendar, LeakyCon.com.
Calendar, you put on now.
You know, it seems so far away, but after watching that trailer, you know, again, I'm more excited again for 2009, Potter-wise.
Also, if you haven't yet signed up, there's like another month left to sign up for the Wizard Watch EP of the Month.
Oh, right.
And that is, you get, for $50, you get like 12 CDs, and since we're almost at the end of 2008, you'll get probably all of them at once from 12 different bands, and it's a ton of music for a small amount of money. All of it benefits First Book, and I think also the HB Alliance, and that is at wizardrockclub.com.
Another musical CD coming out too.
There is, and oh my god, I get to announce it soon, I hope. We're kind of late on it this year, guys, but Jingle Spells 2 is coming. We're going to put up the announcement soon. They will be all shipping out at once this time in the beginning of December, so nobody start yelling that you didn't get it after 3 weeks. They're all shipping out at once. It's amazing. We're going to be putting up the previews to it very, very soon. Last year we raised just a ton of money with this, and we're looking forward to doing it again. There are only going to be 2,000 printed copies, so if you want a printed copy, order it fast. The rest will be going on iTunes, and there will be a special... an exclusive on iTunes. That'd be really funny. So
cool.
Check it out.
Can't wait.
Squeak. All right. Well, I mean, I think that's it. Without John here with Leslie and the drums.
Right.
Without our John.
Yeah.
No, John.
We will see you on the vlogs.
Okay. Bye, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye, everybody.
And until then.
Keep twiddling those dials.
Twiddling
those dials.
The next password will be hot dog.
Keep each other safe. Keep safe.
Good night.
We've missed it.
Dobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when we're having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks to our Scribby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit podcast.com.